Of allegiance.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call.
Councilmember Richards.
Here.
Councilmember Bennett.
Here.
Councilmember Aceves.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Kasdan.
Here.
Mayor Perotti.
Here. Okay, at this time we'll have public forum. Anybody that wishes to speak to anything that's not on our agenda today?
There are no speaker slips.
Okay, thank you. Amendments and adjustments. Oh, I'm looking over that way. I'm so you're over there.
Madam Mayor, we have no amendments or adjustments to the agenda. However, we will be providing you with some replacement pages for your staff report. Unfortunately, we had an issue with our printer, so we weren't able to get those on the dais prior to the start of the meeting, but we will bring those in as soon as they're finished. So.
Okay, thank you. Okay, City Clerk.
Item A1, fiscal year 2017-18 and 2018-19 operating budget workshop.
Thank you. Ms. Green, are you going to start us off?
Yes, I'll just take a moment to talk about the format and our budget process before we dive into the meat of it. Today is a workshop. It's the first of four workshops that staff has planned, and we will be walking you through first our budget overview, our process overview, and then we'll get into the operating budgets. At any time, if council has questions, please feel free to ask them as we go along. I think with this type of subject matter, it just makes more sense to have those questions as we go along, and the workshop format certainly allows for that freedom. So if there are no more questions, I'll just dive into the presentation. I will be kind of toggling back and forth with our interim finance director, Luke Rio. Some parts of the presentation he will present, and sometimes you'll be hearing from me. But we're both here to support council and answer questions. If we have questions from council that require the input from our department directors, we have them here today. So we've brought all the experts to bear so that we can do our best to provide all the information council needs. So we began our budget process at the staff level a couple of months ago. We had a budget calendar we produced and a kickoff meeting with key staff. As you know, we've been working with council to update the strategic plan, which is always a key component of developing our two-year budget. And that allows us to link the strategic plan to our department objectives and goals. We will also be providing you with narratives when we present the final budget for adoption that reflect those department objectives and goals, and also performance measures. We've been working with staff to develop the preliminary budget, which you have in front of you today. And as I've said, now we're heading into the budget workshop phase, and this is where we intend to have more in-depth conversations about the requests and some of the demands on the budget, and also get council's direction as we go through the process. So we have what we hope is a good program for us today. We intend to start with the budget overview process and approach, and then get into operating revenues, fund balance, and the five-year forecast. From there, we'd like to cover personnel changes, pension costs, and the OPEB trust, and then begin to go through operating expenditures. We're hoping to, during that time, get as far as the pavement rehabilitation program and the police services contract. However, we have built-in time in workshop number two to finish going through the operating budgets if needed. And that may very well be the case. So if we don't get through all the operating budgets, not to worry. In workshop number two, we will also take up the review of special funds, and we will start our CIP review if time permits. Budget workshop number three will allow us to continue with the CIP budget, which is quite lengthy, an increase in the number of projects. We're now at, I believe, 69 projects. And we will also have an opportunity to discuss the library budget. As you know, there are outstanding issues that are being worked on regionally as far as the funding for Zone 1 libraries. So we don't have all that information yet, and certainly hope to have it by May 25th, hopefully well before that. Our final budget workshop, May 26th, will address any outstanding items we haven't gotten to yet or any questions that council may have asked where we've been able to pull together some follow-up and some answers. Also, we at that time want to be able to discuss the support to other agencies requests, city grants, and CDBG allocations. And during that workshop, we would also invite presentations by applicants for the support to other agencies requests. And at the end of that session, we're hoping that council will be able to give us direction on funding priorities so that we can finalize our budget and bring it to council for adoption on June 6th. If we are unable to conclude the process prior to the point where we need to publish our June 6th agenda, of course, we have the second meeting in June as well. We're hoping we don't need it, but I wanted you to know ahead of time we do have a time buffer, so you understand what time period we have to work with. So today's workshop, again, we will touch on revenues, expenditures, fund balance, the five-year forecast, and if we get there, some scenarios that we were able to come up with for pavement rehabilitation options in working with the consultant PEI and with city staff. So our approach to preparing the budget, the preliminary budget that you have before you, is to first look at our revenue assumptions and to maintain and present conservative projections. We have taken into consideration the changes in our community, including new development projects that may be winding up or still underway or just getting started in the next fiscal year, and where we expect them to be in the second fiscal year of the two-year budget. For expenditure requests, we ask that for, if at all possible, the departments provide us with status quo budgets. We understood, though, that there were items where council had already given policy direction over the course of the last year that we would need to reflect above status quo in some cases. we also were able to receive personnel change requests from the departments, and we'll talk about those. And we will be, as I've said before, touching on the capital improvement program, or CIP, in the next couple of workshops, because that process is not quite complete yet. We're very close, but there are some projects that need final review before we can recommend them to council. So this year we have a few challenges facing staff and council when it comes to the budget due to increasing amounts of funding needed for a pavement rehabilitation program, not just this year but going forward, and also at the recommendation of the finance committee. We have provided information in your packet which has reflected the the base operating budgets, but does not include the support to other agencies' funding requests, the pavement rehabilitation costs, the library budget, or the CIP. But today, because we realized that might be very difficult for council to start to think about your priorities for funding allocations, we will be providing you with a worksheet that does show the net impacts of those allocations being included. So we will have versions of our fund balance document and of our five-year forecast that show the impacts of having those larger discretionary funding items in the budget and then also out, so you can really see what the dollar amount is of those impacts, and that'll help you stay on target for making your priority decisions about what you would like to fund.
Ms. Green, I have a real quick question before we go any further. On our last workshop on May 26th, have you sent something out to notify the applicants that are requesting funding that might be the appropriate workshop for them to attend?
We're in the process of doing that. We have made contact with some, but not all of those applicants yet, but we are intending to let them know so they can be prepared and plan to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So now I'm going to pass the program to Luke Rio, our interim finance director. He's going to start with the general fund summary.
Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. We are now diving into the fund stuff, getting here into the numbers. Right before you here is the general fund summary. You can see here highlighted are the preliminary projected operating revenues. In comparison to last fiscal year, it is a small decrease of 0.2%. And with operating expenditures, this also includes not reflecting those big ticket items that Michelle just discussed. So this is currently where we stand at $22.7 million. And then moving down towards total expenditures, you'll see that it's still that same number and that capital expenditures have not yet been accounted for. Overall, a net revenue over expenditures results in a $3.78 million revenue over expenditures amount. So this is basically our discretionary funding that we will be asking council to provide direction on where to fund this amount. So in preparing this slide, we decided to also include a modified version of those amounts. This is the general fund modified, which includes the support for other agencies at status quo, pavement rehab, and CIP estimates. Now the amounts for support to other agencies, that includes approximately $497,000. Pavement rehab is programmed at $3.2 million. And CIP is currently estimated at $500,000. Again, what's highlighted right before you can see that with all these additional expenditures, we have a net change of a negative $1.1 million. And then moving on, in for fiscal year 2018-19, we have a net change of a negative $739,000. So general fund revenues, the overall general fund revenues stands at $25.79 million. In fiscal year 2018-19, the overall general fund revenue stands at $26.65 million. And then you can see in the table below, it kind of just highlights what was just previously discussed. And I will be getting into the details of the revenues here in just a second. This slide right before you breaks out the general fund revenue sources. You can see that transient occupancy tax remains our largest tax revenue source at 36%, followed by sales tax at 25% and property tax at 24%. This next slide now highlights the details of our general fund revenues. Going slowly down by category, you can see that we're pretty much status quo overall. We have increases in property tax at 2.3%. Now, part of this is due to increased valuations from the assessor's office and also the recapture of Proposition 8, which I'll get into detail in a little bit here. Sales tax remains status quo. We do meet with our tax consultants quarterly, and so we do keep an eye out on what to expect here. Transient occupancy tax has an expected growth of 6.2%. This is conservatively estimated and includes the two new hotels that will be opening up here in the next fiscal year and in early 2018. Franchise fees remains to have a steady growth, though it should be noted that we've recently lost the franchise fees for petroleum due to a recent bankruptcy with Venoco, though it was not a significant impact to our fees. Charges for services have been adjusted to reflect expected revenues, and fines and penalties have also been adjusted to reflect the activity levels, and investment income has also been adjusted to reflect estimated actuals. I will get into detail more about these revenue sources here in a little bit. Oh, and it's also important to note the modified staff report that we just provided you guys has we're anticipating a budget adjustment to the transfer in revenue source. So what we've realized is that we've had this one-time revenue source coming in from the DIF funds that is no longer necessary, where we can now expense out of the DIF funds. So this kind of trues up that revenue source line item. And that amount was for $90,000.
In the replacement pages that we provided you, where those changes were made is highlighted in yellow, so you can quickly find where we made those changes. It also applied to some of the attachments, so we made the changes throughout. And this was something we caught, obviously, after we published the agenda originally and felt it was important to bring to council's attention.
Okay, moving on here, general fund revenues. So property tax, we had an increase in assessed valuations and an additional Proposition 8 recapture. And just to reflect on what Proposition 8 was and what happened was basically during the recession, single family residential properties were reduced between 2008 and 2012 and now have solely been identified by the county assessor's office to basically replenish or put their assessed values back at normal levels. And so we've seen increased valuations in terms of that. Now, what's unknown about this is the timing of when the county assessor will reassessing these properties. So we're working with our tax consultants and hoping to get more information here soon. The sales tax, so we adjusted for corrections for misallocations, but they are projected to remain flat. The transient occupancy tax, that's the largest revenue source, and like I mentioned previously, we account for the two new hotels, and in both years we expect to increase over 6%. This next slide before you is
Can I ask a question on just the last slide before we leave it? Yeah. I'm a little confused on the Prop 8. That is the only those property owners that ask for an adjustment because of the downturn?
To my knowledge, yes, that's what it was for.
Okay.
It didn't require, it wasn't because properties got sold during that period of time and they allowed the value to be reduced. It was simply a request was sent in.
Correct. So basically, when they were reassessed, yeah, they had a lower property tax value. So part of this whole additional Prop 8 recapture, they can technically, some homeowners can see their property tax, you know, increase more than the 2% maximum allowed to get them back at the original assessed value. Any more questions on that item?
No, thank you.
So this next slide before you shows the property tax dollar breakdown. Out of $1, Goleta receives about 4 cents, almost close to 5 cents, for every property tax dollar. So moving on to general fund revenues, the franchise fees for that particular revenue item we collect on cable, electric, gas, solid waste, and petroleum. We're no longer expecting petroleum. You know, and I recently just reached out to SoCalGas, and I noticed huge fluctuations over the past years of our gas revenue, and it's been discovered basically that that due to historic lows in prices in natural gas, that we've been receiving a lot lesser amount than usual. At one point back in 2005, 2006, we were receiving about $150,000 in gas revenue, but now we receive roughly around $60,000. And that's largely due to the low prices for natural gas, and then also energy efficiency programs and new gas technologies. Charges for services, this relates to revenues related to new building activity and also business license fees that we collect here at the city. They're expected to remain steady. Every year at mid-year, we do look at the business the building activity, and we do adjust accordingly if we do expect more growth, more permits are being pooled and whatnot. Investment income, this line item consists of rental income and investment earnings. We expect to lose somewhat income from investments due to the vacant Ranger House, though we do expect to gain on interest as interest rates have been going up, and currently we have our pooled funds in the money market account and in LAFE.
I have a quick question regarding the Ranger House. Is that something that we're just not going to be renting out in the near future? Does it need that much renovation? I had no idea that we weren't considering continuing renting that.
Right. The staff has engaged in a process of assessing what improvements need to be made to that building, and have recently determined that it's not in a condition that we could immediately offer it up to an employee to rent in exchange for those duties where they open and close the park and, you know, to clean up and other wrap-up items in the park. We will need to be making some improvements. Ms. Gaglione is very well aware of what those are, so I'd like to have her say a few things to help answer your question.
Thank you.
Yes, Mayor Perotti. Unfortunately, when we went in after the last employee moved out, there were a number of things that are just in a very bad state of repair. The kitchen and bathroom both need to be gutted. There's bad flooring. There's a leak in the roof. There were rats. I mean, we're looking in the vicinity of $100,000 to get rid of wood rot, have it painted inside and out. Some windows may need to be replaced, and have it in a condition where you could hand it to an employee tenant and then expect them to maintain it from there.
So would we not want to, in the future, in the near future, allocate some funding to improve that building? Are we just going to let it sit? Or what? Do we have a plan, or is that going to be discussed at a later date?
Yeah, we're putting together the plans and everything that needs to be done, and that's why we're saying we're thinking it's in the $100,000 range, so hopefully we'll have something soon. And we were balancing that against if you brought in a modular, but that's around $139,000. So it still may be within the range where it's better to fix it. But we're also looking at then the time. How quickly can the repairs be done versus how quickly something else could happen?
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hey, moving on and continuing on with our general fund revenues, reimbursements. So this line item here is related to staff time and RDA successor agency administrative costs, and it also reflects on CIP cost recovery. And due to utilizing contract engineering, we're more so charging to the CIP project budget rather than cost recovery directly to the general fund. Other revenues consist of the motor vehicle license late fees, which is currently only budgeted, but also includes miscellaneous revenues that vary year to year. So that can include one-time donations or some one-time special miscellaneous revenue that we've never accounted for before. Transfers in, previously mentioned, this accounts for CDBG staff time reimbursements, and other transfers vary year to year. We actually expect this current fiscal year extra revenue that we did not expect to receive related to the Prop 84 grant from Fund 313, and that's actually going to be addressed at the third quarter financial review. So general fund expenditures, this slide here outlines the total general fund expenditures that we can anticipate. And fiscal year 17-18, overall general fund expenditures stand at $22.71 million. I've included some notes here that affect this number. These expenditures currently do not include the support to other agency requests, pavement rehab, or CIP projects out of the general fund. And this also reflects that, assumes that the reserves have also been replenished based on council policy and city manager discretion.
This is a convenient point as any. I, just to let other council members know, I had put in a request that we examine this particular policy on the reserve fund that seconded by the mayor. And the idea being that the current policy of 4 months, the number seems somewhat arbitrary. And what I would like to look at, given our current budget status, is what do other jurisdictions use when it comes to, this is contract cities. So this isn't money that's going for police and fire per se. So what do other cities use when they're trying to accomplish these goals? And then second, what are the likely expenses we would have that we need to budget for? That is, what are the particular services that we think are essential? We're not going to the 4 month ongoing expenditures assumes business as usual. Well, of course, we're not going to actually have HR hiring. We're not going to have many of the ordinary activities that we typically do. So what is it that we need? If we want to preserve a certain amount of services, of funding for services in a dire emergency. So this is not money, just for those who are listening. This is not the rainy day fund. This is a separate fund associated with just unforeseen emergencies that stop revenue inflows for an extended 4 month period. And so I'm simply asking that we look at what are the options that we have, and hopefully that will be available to us when we start looking at all the other funding requests that have come up before. Did you have questions for me?
I do. Okay. I'm a little taken back by it all, but that's okay. This fund was established, and the percentage was established by the first council when the city incorporated. And even though the council's changed over time, it's something that we've all in the past at least suggested was prudent and appropriate. I'm a little confused on what you're suggesting. This is not a rainy day fund, or it's not a contingency fund. I'm not sure what those definitions mean to you. What they mean to me is that if the sky is falling, then we have a means to tap into some funds that might be available. In the instance of the recession, we never tapped the reserve funds, and I was very proud of that. Many communities did, and that wasn't enough, and their cities suffered as a result. We were lucky enough to make budgetary cutbacks that allowed us to get through that mess without ever having to touch our contingency fund, which I thought was excellent. But I think you have to keep in mind, I don't know, I'm a little, as I say, I'm a little confused. It's not just an issue of revenue coming here. If we were to lose revenue by an earthquake, for example, that revenue is not going to come in for years. if we're going to lose revenue from a major fire that may burn through the community, that's not going to be built back up for years. So those are long-term revenue impacts that the contingency fund, quite frankly, is not going to take care of. And we would certainly have access to state and federal funds to help and assist us. However, in the interim period before you get assistance from state or federal government, you need to be able to tap your own revenue, or correction, your own funds, and if any revenue sources were to be cut back. If you have damages that occur in order to go forward and make a difference, you need to expend your own funds. So these are all, you know, we hope we never have to use the money. We hope the money is always sitting there. It doesn't mean that you can't borrow from the contingency fund. There was a time when we were looking at putting together a purchase for a city hall, and one of the concepts was to have a credit line available, which we did establish, so that we could tap into that if we needed to for the contingency funds, as opposed to having the money just sit there. So there was an opportunity to use it for a positive purpose in our community. That didn't go forward. Council decided that after much discussion and debate that we weren't going to go forward with that, which is fine. That's what we're supposed to do. I'm just saying, so there are some different concepts as to what the funding can be used for and how valuable it might be. And I'm just concerned that it's like there's no necessity for it, or there's no reason for it. And that's kind of what I'm hearing, and that concerns me a great deal.
So let me, I mean, we don't have to make, we're not making any decision right now. We're getting information. I've requested information from the staff. But the first thing to point out is that the four-month period is essentially arbitrary. There's not an, you know, we don't have a rationale for why 4 months. Why not 3 months? Why not 2 months? What is the appropriate period of time? What is the appropriate amount of revenue that we would want to have? And other jurisdictions might have other things set aside. That's the first thing. Also, how much revenue is appropriate? Let's not just choose an arbitrary number. What are the services that we think we need to provide in the event that revenues were not coming in? What is it that we're going to do? I think we need to, before we just set aside money, we need to think about what is it we would be trying to accomplish. I understand particularly when, you know, if we were funding, if we where did not have some sort of, if we directly funded the fire department, we would want to make sure we had funds for the fire department, the police department, that we could fund any overages, so we could keep paying them if there's some sort of emergency. It's less clear to me what it is that our function would be doing in the event that some sort of cataclysmic event would occur. And there are, I would add, other ways of accomplishing some of the goals that you highlighted. If in the event there was an emergency, if we're going to get that money, it means the banks are functioning. If the banks are functioning, it means loans from FEMA and the state and others are also forthcoming. It means that, forgot the other point I was going to make, but I guess what I'm saying is it's appropriate to step back and think about what it is that's necessary for us to accomplish. And it's, you know, if I understand the goals that you outlined, and I guess what I'm saying is that to the extent that we want to continue to accomplish those, there are many ways that we can get to that same end. So, I mean, one example, one source is, I don't know if we already have, for Forest Service, for instance, and Bureau of Land Management, when they're running out of money in fire suppression, they have the authority to borrow money. That is, in essence, without going to Congress, they have the money to borrow money from any accounts. It means for us, it would be staff could take CIP money and dedicate it for any purpose without there being some sort of formal process of decision-making and so forth. So I'm all for recognizing and preparing for emergencies. What I'm saying is let's think about what the most effective way is to ensure that we can accomplish that and not just leave money in a bank that we intend to never use, even when we're in the middle of a giant recession. Thank you.
Councilmember Savas?
Well, I like Councilman Bennett, a little bit surprised about the discussion. We covered this during the Finance Committee, and at that time we talked about how important it was to have a contingency fund for in case of emergencies.
It was raised. I didn't agree. I mean, yes, we talked about it, but I had a different point of view.
So we talked about it in the Finance Committee, and it was explained there by staff and myself as to why we have the fund, how long we've had the fund. And in fact, there had been discussions during some of the good years of increasing that number. And it's like, you know, how do you do household accounts? Do you have a backup fund? I mean, that's our backup fund if there's an emergency. So we covered it. But my concern right now as we move forward is that you're asking staff through another council member other questions that really should be asked here so that we can participate in the discussion. I don't know what's in that memo, your email you're reading from, but we should have a discussion here about all the elements to make sure that we're all involved in it. And so the fund, again, as Councilman Bennett said, was established by the first council because they didn't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to make sure that they had money as a city grew. And they used a well thought out methodology in comparing it with what our expenditures are. Now, there are years when our expenditures are higher, like you see here. But there's also years that fund has more money in it than we originally projected, but we didn't touch it because it would balance out. So I'd be very concerned if we have a discussion about changing our contingency fund because it does take time to get recoverables, if there are any. The fire service, as you mentioned, that's funded through assessment district that's based in our general plan, and it has nothing to do with the contingency fund. So, well, we're not federal, we're city. So anyway, that's my comments.
I'd just like to make a quick comment that I think Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan brought up questions that needed to be answered. My understanding was that these questions, that's why I supported the questions, that would go to Michelle Green and would come back to the full council. So that was my understanding of the questions. So that was the intent, Councilmember Sebas, that
we
would
all
get. If
we get copies of the emails, that'd be perfect.
Would have to go through Michelle.
Right. Yeah. I didn't. You know, I mean, that's one of the downsides to the Brown Act, that I can't just, if I come up with something, I can't send it out to everyone else to discuss. And I wanted to be able to give the city manager and others time times are not our ally, so I wanted to give them an opportunity to see it ahead of time. If I had been able to send it to everyone through emails, I would have.
Okay. Go ahead, Luke.
And one quick note I want to make here on the general fund expenditures in fiscal year 2018-19 and going forward, we actually calculated a projected CalPERS impact when they do lower the discount rate from 7.5% to 7% over the three-year period. Now, that discount rate change will not happen until the second year, fiscal year 18-19. And I'll go into detail here in the next slides. This next slide here is the fund balance, the current fund balance projections. To the left, you'll see that we have the fiscal year 2016-17 projected ending fund balance. In total, it ends at $4.3 million and then projected to end at $17.4 million at the end of fiscal year 17-18. I've highlighted here the unassigned fund balance. It's estimated to currently finish at $3.1 million. Again, this does not include the discretionary funding items such as support to other agencies, CIP project funding, or pavement rehab. This is constantly a moving number, and it depends also on the amount of actual revenues received and expenditures expensed. The five-year forecast. So in part of your packet, we've included a five-year forecast and also an alternative five-year forecast that does include the status quo amounts for support to other agencies, pavement rehab, and CIP projects. We've covered revenues over expenditures each year. The revenues assumptions are very conservative. We have the hotels programmed in fiscal year 17-18 and happening again in mid-year for the second hotel. The expenditures have been adjusted for the limited term staff and also includes that in CalPERS employer normal cost rate. We've also removed one-time contracts. And again, the original five-year forecast does not include the support to other agencies, payment rehab, or capital projects.
So if we take a moment, in the packet that we provided with the updated figures, the last two attachments, one is labeled attachment 4, five-year forecast, and the one below it is attachment 4, five-year forecast with pavement support and CIP. So if you go to the last page of each of those and compare them side by side, you will see at the toward the bottom of the both of the worksheets, you'll see the difference in the net revenues over expenditures. In the scenario that does not show those allocations for pavement, support to other agencies, and CIP, that's the fund balance that Luke had referred to earlier at the beginning of the presentation. And then when you go to the modified five-year, you'll see the net revenues over expenditures with the negative 1.18 million that Luke also showed. So we wanted to be able to point it out to you in context as well, so you could see how that appears with the breakdown of the allocation request for all of the operating budgets also. Just another way to visually present it to you.
So I just want to touch, go back here real quick to the fund balance projection. So this table right here before you reflects the 5 year that does not include the support to other agencies, payment, rehab, and CIP projects. So if we were to include those, if we were to include the estimated amounts for support to other agencies, payment, rehab, and CIP projects, we would actually be at a negative unassigned fund balance, which from there we would have to balance it out, take from other reserves that were set aside, whether it was by policy or management discretion. So moving on the five-year forecast, we plan to review this worksheet again and have it finalized after the last budget workshop in May. The net revenues over expenditures will change pending on council's directions. Just a side note, any additional net revenue could support additional capital projects or debt service for future infrastructure projects if we do choose to pursue that route. CalPERS OPEB, so other post-employment benefits. So staff plans to provide a separate report for council consideration on initiating the trust fund process. We currently have set aside $333,500 set aside in fund balance to fund this trust fund. We do get an actuary report for OPEB every 2 years. We currently just had the most recent one this year. And we currently have 9 current retirees, and our annual cost is approximately $15,000 a year. CalPERS pension liability. So this slide basically covers the impacts of CalPERS lowering the discount rate. For those that don't know, the discount rate is what CalPERS calls their long-term rate of return from their investments. This will take effect 2018-19, and each change to this discount rate will result in an increase in accrued liability. Now we will see our largest impact in fiscal year 2020-21 when the discount rate is at 7%. I provided this table to show you how CalPERS is planning to basically lower the discount rate over the years and what we can expect.
Can I ask a question on that, please? The, you know, using the set aside that you talked about in the previous slide and what we're, what our current obligation is, do you have an assumption, and I meant to ask this during the Finance Committee, but, or maybe you're going to cover it, but do you have an assumption once we get hit with a 2021 7% as to how many potential retirees we'll have at that point and what that impact will be in comparison to the money we set aside or need to set aside?
So the set-aside money we have right now is strictly just for the OPEB. We don't have money set aside yet for the for the pension liability, but we do have money set aside for the other post-employment benefit, just for healthcare retirees only. Anything that touch retirees for pension liability will be affected from the CalPERS pool. And that number is the accrued unfunded liability is based on total covered payroll. And that number is, you know, subjective to change year to year depending on CalPERS' investment returns. And I will cover that accrued liability here in the next slide.
Okay, because you'll show how our contribution increases.
Yeah.
Excuse me. That just raised a question that, of course, I've brought up for a number of years. The council adopted a policy a number of years ago, and it bothers me because it seems to have never been implemented, even though this council approved it. There was a time when PERS, because they put us in a different pool, reduced our annual contribution to PERS. And that money was to be set aside in a fund because at the time PERS was not in a position to tell us what our unfunded liability was, and they were directed by the state legislature to do that, and for all communities, so that everybody would be better understanding what their unfunded liability would be. Well, in the meantime, we kept saving money each year, and the money was supposed to be set aside for the purposes of buying down our unfunded liability once we found out what that liability was. So I guess because I've asked it a number of times in the past, where's that money that was supposed to be set aside by policy so we could use it to reduce the unfunded liability?
So we currently do not have that money set aside, as far as I know, though we just have it just for the OPEB liability. But that is something that we can definitely work on in identifying that extra funds. But we currently do not have anything set aside of that sort that I know about. I don't know if, Michelle, if you can elaborate if you know anything about.
Also, the other thing that we should note is that we did approach CalPERS about paying down that unfunded liability. I know, Luke, you did make that contact, mm-hmm. but at the time we approached them, they basically said they were not in a position to receive any prepayment of unfunded liability because they knew the adjustment to the discount rate was coming, and they advised the city to wait until we saw the result of what that would be. Is that a correct summary?
Yeah, so basically what happened, I went ahead and reached out to CalPERS to get see what kind of payment schedule we can enter into, what type of amortization schedule, either paying down the unfunded liability on a 15-year or 20-year, and see what our net result savings would be. The actuary there actually advised me and said that he wouldn't recommend it at this time due to the lowering of the discount rate will have a huge impact on that schedule. So basically we would think we were paying it down. Eventually the schedule would get, you know, updated, and we would actually end up owing more. And so we'll actually get updated numbers here in July 2017 on what that unfunded liability looks like.
And for the next workshop, we will go back and look at the policy direction we received and the amount that was earmarked to be set aside and give you an update on that. Because I do recall that conversation.
Thank you.
You know, I think what happened was is we've got $333,000 set aside, but our liability is only $15,000. I think we just didn't separate it. That might be an issue. I don't know.
So that $333,000 was a number given to us by our actuary for the OPEB.
That's right. And we need a separate account. So when you come back, we definitely need a separate account.
Yeah. So this next slide, this table right before you, shows that CalPERS discount rate adjustment and the impact to the city. So what I've done here is I kind of separated it over the fiscal years and what we can expect to see. The columns here that's highlighted right before you, the employer rate normal cost rate, the employer normal cost rate, that's the rate that is charged on employee salaries. And you can see that this upcoming fiscal year, it's at 8.921%, and then we'll be increasing over the years up to 9.4%, 9.9%, then 10.9% in fiscal year 2020-21. And that is also the last year that the discount rate will be lowered. The next column right before it is the unfunded liability amount. So this is the amount that we are also required to pay annually on top of the employer normal cost rate. And I just want to note here that the city has been taking advantage of doing a prepayment to save a couple thousand dollars here each year. And this is also reflects the portion that belongs to the total unfunded accrued liability. So we can expect to see cost increases over the years. And then on the column on the far right, you can see the dollar amounts and then also the percent change over the years of how much this CalPERS impact will have on the city. And you can see just due to the types of retirement plans we offer here and not having public safety, that we don't see a dramatic increase, though it is still significant enough that it should be addressed. And we plan on approaching CalPERS again here in July and seeing what type of cost savings we can incur if we were to explore of entering into a 20-year or 15-year schedule plan on paying down the unfunded liability.
Can you explain why the cost increase for 18-19 isn't as high as it seems like it goes out of order? It's not as high as the cost increase for 17-18?
So these projections are based on what they call employer payroll, covered payroll. So they're based on 2 years prior payroll. So it's kind of a,
okay.
Yeah, it's a little tricky, and I kind of get into that here in the next slide of why there's such a lag like that. So CalPERS pension, the updated projections, we'll have a more realistic, more updated actual numbers here pretty soon here in July 2017. We were actually able to come across a tool that was provided by CalPERS to make these types of projections and help assist us with our budgeting. So like I mentioned earlier, that we'll go ahead and contact the CalPERS actuary and discuss the amortization schedule, and this will help, you know, pay off the unfunded liability, either a 15 or 20-year period. As of right now, as of the current annual valuation report, the city is 84.4% funded. Our current unfunded accrued liability is at $1.7 million, but with the factoring in the discount rate, our current estimated unfunded accrued liability is at $2.7 million. So that's kind of a huge increase right there on our unfunded accrued liability. We got an extra $1 million. Now, like I just mentioned before, so the CalPERS numbers are 2 years behind. I've written a little statement right there in the fine print. So the slag is necessary for CalPERS to basically need the extra amount of time to extract and test the membership and financial data, and the need to provide the public agencies with their employer contributions well in advance of the fiscal year. And now we're entering into the personnel changes section, and Michelle will be covering this.
Okay, in our budget proposal, we are targeting 66 positions. Those are full-time equivalents. And in looking at our budget, we have made several types of personnel changes that we're recommending. A series of reclassifications, extending funding for one limited term position, removal of vacant positions and the addition of a position in Public Works that will be funded by the Solid Waste Fund or Fund 211. In this next slide, you can see a little bit more detail here. I'll just walk through these. In the city attorney's budget, we are recommending the transfer of a position from that department to the city manager's department. So that would represent a deletion of one position from the city attorney's budget. And this was based on information, recommendations we received from our interim city attorney, Mike Jenkins, and based on an assessment of the workload and the resource needs, we found that while the management assistant position was not needed in the legal services division, that in the city manager's budget and in finance, there was an unmet need for additional assistance. So we're proposing to transfer that position over, where 20% of that position's time will be spent assisting in finance, and the remaining 80% would be assisting in the city manager's department. Also, we have in the city manager's department an addition, a slight addition that's correcting an error that was in the current year budget, where the executive assistant position was somehow not budgeted as full-time, but so we need to correct that. There's definitely plenty of work there. In current planning, we're recommending the deletion of the management analyst position. It was allocated 2 years ago, but was not filled. So in discussions with the department and also in discussions with CityGate, who are finalizing the operational assessment of the planning department, it was determined that this position would not be needed. So we've deleted it from our proposal. However, also in current planning, the associate planner position that in the current budget is a term position, a limited term position of 2 years. We are recommending that that be extended another 2 years based again on input from the planning department. Ms. Prossy is here. She can provide additional detail, but basically we find that the workload, the caseload still justifies the need for that position over the next 2 years. And that was also verified by CityGate, as you'll see when they bring you the final report in June. So if you would like more detail from Ms. Prossy, she's here. In Public Works, Parks and Open Space, we are recommending the deletion of one lead maintenance worker. And we'll talk a little bit more about that on the next slide. In the Capital Improvement Division of Public Works, we've recommended the deletion of a senior project engineer, which was a limited term, 5 year position. The addition of some contract engineering services has caused us to believe that this position will not be needed in the next 2 year budget cycle. And we have Rosemary Gaglione, who can also provide further information if you have additional questions about that. We are recommending the addition of an assistant engineer to the Solid Waste and Environmental Services Division. Again, as I mentioned earlier, this would be funded by the Solid Waste Fund. It is not a position that would be funded by the general fund. And the primary purpose of that addition would be to provide an assistant engineer who could lend support to that division in reviewing plans, designs, specs related to drainage, stormwater projects. They would help with the review of both the city's projects and those proposed by private development. That would be some of the main duties of that position. Again, Ms. Gaglione can elaborate if you would like that. Going to the next slide, we also have a series of recommended reclassifications. In the city clerk's division, we're recommending the reclassification of one records tech recording clerk to a deputy city clerk due to the fact that this position is already doing many of the duties of a deputy city clerk, and we need to bring it in line with the appropriate class spec. In public works, an administrative assistant, we're recommending a reclassification to a management assistant for similar reasons. They're providing a higher level support than in the administrative assistant class spec, and we need to make adjustments to reflect how that position is being utilized currently. Also in public works, a reclassification of a management analyst to a senior management analyst, again due to the more advanced journey level professional services this position is providing, which are no longer consistent with the management analyst position, and so we need to adjust the classification to reflect the actual duties being performed. In public works, we, as you'll recall on the other slide, I mentioned a deletion of one lead maintenance worker position. We have two currently allocated. For the second of those positions, we're recommending a reclassification to a maintenance supervisor position so that this position can act not only as a field supervisor, but take on some additional supervisory duties such as scheduling the crews, managing personnel, evaluating personnel, making decisions about their deployment and their workload allocation, et cetera. So this would be to improve the efficiency of the maintenance division and spread some of the supervisory duties that are now currently being shared in part by this lead maintenance worker. So there is also a situation where this individual is working out of class in some instances. So when you look in totality at the recommended changes, both the transfers, the additions, the deletions, and the reclassifications, the net fiscal impact to the general fund is actually a decrease of approximately $186,000. So it's not representing an additional appropriation needed to make these changes.
So a two-part sort of question. The first is that, you know, when I think of some things offhand that we might need people for, it comes in planning where, you know, I think of that backlog, whether it's from the strategic plan or the strategic plan or the general plan, where we have this lengthy list of projects that are unfinished. And so the first thing is I want to be sure whether it's through, you know, hired personnel, contracting, that do we need a person? So the first thing, in a sense, is do we need a person here who's going to provide that service, who's going to oversee that sort of thing, or do they indeed have the existing personnel to carry that out? And along the same lines is, you know, that there's a transfer going on to the city manager's office of a management assistant. I guess I wonder what that person would be doing.
Sure, let me take your second question first. The management assistant that would be transferred to the city and shared between the city manager's department and finance, in the city manager's department would be assisting with support of the IT program, which is in my department, also with a combination of support to some of the risk management duties and HR duties. They would work directly under the supervision of the HR risk manager. So also they would provide relief for the receptionist. Well, Luke can speak more to the duties that would be performed in the finance department.
So mostly in finance department, we have, they're mostly accounting and oriented staff. We don't have anyone there to basically do work on our RFPs, review our contracts with our tax consultants, and also issue purchase requisitions, because that would kind of be an internal control issue if finance was issuing their own purchase recs and approving their purchase recs as well. So having this 20% allocation and this extra assistance will definitely help out finance department in the long run. They will also be assisting in collections in terms of collecting on accounts receivable and having that extra body there that will be able to assist us.
But in particular with the 80, so that's fine that there's some identified use in the 20%, and I assume the person, he or she, is qualified to do that. But with respect to the 80%, it sounds like, I mean, for one thing, we're busy doing a study right now to determine what the future will be with IT, and it seems rather presumptuous to be putting someone into a position now in anticipation without knowing how that study's going to turn out. It sounds like there isn't a specific recognized inadequacy in current services, and it's sort of we're adding someone, we're going to figure out how to use them later. Am I misinterpreting that? I guess partly I ask because if there's a defined need in planning, you know, then put here him or her in planning.
We do have a defined need in the city manager's department. I don't have the list in front of me. I'll be happy to provide that at the next workshop to answer your question. So you can have that additional detail to satisfy your question. I failed to bring it with me, unfortunately, today.
Yeah, I guess I feel uncomfortable unless we have a known inadequacy. And mind you, we also are waiting to fill a position, you know, the deputy manager. So we still don't have that. To fill just adding staff where it's kind of vague as far as what the need is, what the bang for the buck is.
I apologize. My verbal description is not adequate. I recognize that. But like I said, I failed to bring the document with me that has the additional detail. As far as your question on IT, it would be more of a help desk function. We don't currently have anyone who is assigned to staff has questions, things that can be done very quickly to help them out. You know, maybe they've forgotten their password or there's an issue, their machine is frozen, or, you know, things can very quickly be done in-house in a matter of moments rather than waiting for our contract IT consultant to respond. Those are the types of things that can help increase our efficiency in the IT program. So even though we are waiting for the results of the study, we are going to continue to need that sort of help desk person here in City Hall to reduce the downtime when issues come up. And it is something that this individual has done in the past for that department and is very familiar with.
Okay. Yeah, I think this was very clearly explained during our Finance Committee meeting. I want to congratulate our city manager and our finance director to look at the overall operation of our organization, see what can make realignments and readjustments, eliminate open positions that we don't need. And the bottom line, it's a positive net of $186,000. We should remember that as we move forward and our city manager feels there needs to be a position augmented or deleted, that comes back to council to make that decision. So if a project goes forward where we need additional help, either contract services or an FTE or part of an FTE, we can make that adjustment as we move forward. This is just her initial view. I like it. It's refreshing. We don't always see this. In many years we've seen, you know, add, and then we cut back. And planning's a good example. We've gone to contract services because their workload has been very inconsistent as far as projects coming in. So I like this. I don't need any more information. I think it makes total sense in my mind.
So the first part of
council, I have a couple questions. That's okay. Getting back to the management assistant, I'm sorry if I don't know this, but do you have several management assistants, or this would be the only one? Is there is is this person filling in a need because we don't have that already? Is that what you're saying?
It's a classification where currently we have three employees that are in it, one in planning, one in city manager's department, and the one that we're proposing to transfer over from legal services, since it was identified that there isn't a current need there, and certainly we have current needs elsewhere.
Okay.
And then in one of the reclassifications, there is a proposed, the one in Public Works, for the administrative assistant to be reclassified to a management assistant. So then we would have four.
Okay. You know what would be helpful for me? I don't know for others, but what we used to get a couple years ago, or like flow charts, and that really had all the different positions in the different departments. I remember Councilmember Easton wanted pictures to go along with that. I don't think we need pictures, but names,
yes,
would be helpful too.
Right. The budget document, which you will adopt and will publish, it'll become our new budget, will have that that organizational chart with the positions, the titles, and the allocations. And, you know, we can provide the names also to council.
I think that would be helpful for me. I know that sometimes I've been in a position where I wanted to introduce one of our staff to someone else, and I want to make sure I get their title, what they are correct. So it's just to be for that reason.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then going back to Council Member or Mayor Pro Tem Kasten's first question about the backlog in planning, I would defer to our planning director and perhaps even our advanced planning manager to chime in on their recommendations for the staffing levels and how to address those items that are in progress but not yet completed.
We have the budget staffing as proposed based on what we believe we can accomplish on the work plan for the next 2 years, or make good strides in the work plan in the next 2 years. But of course, as things change, you know, there's always the possibility of, you know, between what staff we have in advanced planning and the use of contractors, we can, you know, we can accomplish, you know, what we have. I mean, if there's more things that council wants us to do, you know, that we might need to look at additional staffing, and that we would do that through the city manager's office. I mean,
let me be clearer then. There's, for instance, the butterfly habitat plan that was started in 2010. Is there the money in the account right now to finish it? Are there the personnel to finish it? All of those backlog things, I want to know that we are going to have the resources to not let these things linger. There's stuff in the general plan that were proposed. Let's make sure we budgeted for it, or let's make sure at least we're in a position to choose whether this is indeed a priority of ours or not. But you know, not to say hopefully we'll strive to make, you know, et cetera.
So from a work perspective on the big projects, those are something that the planners do. So, and we've been short-staffed in advanced planning, and that is soon to be corrected, and that is not news ready for the streets yet, but I think you'll see a big change when the staffing gets corrected in advanced planning with the already allocated staff. The management position, that's more of a support position.
Forget about the management position per se. That's a separate question in a way. For this particular question, I just want to be sure that of all that various backlog of things, that it's not that we have accounted for the funding we need, for the staff that we need, that we will have enough resources to get it done, that there's not going to be, I mean, obviously if we have earthquakes or other things happen, but that assuming none of that sort of thing happens, we've budgeted to accomplish that backlog, that we will finish it.
That's our plan. We are taxed, I'll be honest with you. It's a big workload, but we think we can do it with the resources that we have, with the planners that we have.
So that we don't need to accomplish it, to get this completed, we don't need to add personnel, we don't need to add any additional resources, that we have the personnel to accomplish it.
Yeah, we could. A management analyst would help with a lot of the contracting and invoicing and purchase orders and setting up packets and things like that, so that would take some burden off of staff. But you know, we're doing it now, so we would continue to do it in the future without that position.
Okay, but that would be, in other words, that would be the key position in order to accomplish that we could see that whole list, that whole backlog accomplished with a management analyst.
I think what Ann is saying, that that would help. I mean, we have that would help with the administrative side. I mean, obviously, in the best case, sure, we'd take more staff, but we know that we have to balance that with the rest of the needs of the city and where the vision is for the, you know, the council wants to go.
Except I want to hold you guys accountable for accomplishing those things, not the whole, you know, not Public Works. They have their own issues that will, you know, that we hold them accountable for. But this is, there's a list of things that historic ordinances, you know, affordability and housing, you know, we can go through a lot of things, and I want to see that it can, that we can get it accomplished.
I'm going to jump in here real quick and suggest that we haven't seen the City Gate. You've seen the City Gate. I guess there's a draft. I think for us on the council, it might be helpful to see what their recommendations are. I'm guessing that.
Yeah, I have a draft. We gave them comments. I have not gotten a revised draft back, so I don't have a version of the draft that would reflect our changes and comments and corrections and things. So what you would see wouldn't be the final product, you know, because we had a lot of input into it. But one thing that was clear is that what they've recommended is staying with the current staffing level of planners, because they felt that in with the combination of some of the development projects winding up and that workload decreasing, there would be opportunities for staff to engage in some of the other efforts that the planning staff are faced with, such as some of the items that Mayor Pro Tem mentioned, so that there would be an opportunity to kind of expand the tasks, the areas of responsibility into those other areas, away from the types of case planning that have in recent years been focused more on the volume of development projects.
Well, I guess my concern is that we haven't seen the draft, and it's, there's a suggestion for a deletion of a management analyst, and they're saying that, sure, you know, our staff is saying they could use that position, that would be helpful, but yet we're making this decision, you're making the decision to delete it. So I just want to make sure that they have the tools and the bodies that they need to get the pressure that we put on you to get things done.
And if to clarify, the position for the management analyst is it's in current planning, but because the way our department is organized, we don't have an admin division, and so that person would be supporting all of our divisions. So that is similar to, I just wanted to make sure that's clear. It's not a current planner position.
Okay.
So someone might think that it's another planner. So that, and if maybe you aren't making decisions today, if we could just circle back and have another discussion about the need for the position or the City Gate report and how we look at our workload distribution over the next 2 years, and then we can report back at another workshop.
I'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
And thank you, by the way, because you don't always get that kind of support from your city council. to make sure that we have enough resources to get our workload done. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and I'd like to understand, is it suggested that part of the concern is the unfilled positions that we already have that are just not, that are vacant currently, that haven't been filled, that is affecting workload, that once filled, then we would anticipate a change in that? Or is it that these are positions that just aren't there?
It's an unfilled position. So it's in the budget, but yet unfilled.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so moving on here to, just before that, I just want to mention that there's actually an attachment 3 in your packet that kind of highlights the overall general schedule of authorized positions and how they're allocated by budget. Not necessarily like a full-time position, but there are some positions that, you know, spend some time in different programs within their own department. And you can clearly see that in attachment 3. So moving on here to expenditures, general government, city council, that remains status quo, except for the instance that we had removed the support to other agencies, which we plan to discuss at workshop number 4 on May 6. This also includes May 26, and this also includes salary increases of 10% effective in January 2019.
That was also something that we corrected in the staff report. We had it in the wrong fiscal year, so you'll also see those changes highlighted in the replacement pages.
City manager's office, the budget reflects the transfer of the management analyst position at 80% and correcting the executive assistant position to be budgeted at full time. There is also a line item proposed for $65,000 for special studies as needed. In reviewing the city clerk's budget, you'll notice that there's decreases in the first year and then an increase in the second year, and that's primarily due to election costs as they're done every year. We also have reclassification of a records tech position to deputy city clerk. And a side note here that we've reprogrammed the media services expense of approximately $14,000 out of the general fund to the public education and government, also known as PEG fund, for capital related expenditures.
If council will recall, this is a fee that we're now able to collect, which we weren't able to previously. So it's a new addition as a revenue source.
The city attorney's budget, and meeting with the interim city attorney, we've come up with a budget that reflects actual usage. It was recommended that we remove the legal intern at this time and transfer the management assistant, that we also reset the budget amounts to the actual estimated usage, and this resulted in a overall decrease of 48%. Keep in mind, we do keep a reserve balance for litigation, approximately $300,000 in fund balance. We're also planning on setting aside $150,000 in reserves for an in-house city attorney if city council chooses to bring back an in-house around mid-year. And for budgetary purposes, we've also included the in-house city attorney position reprogrammed back in fiscal year 18-19.
Of course, that's subject to council direction. I know you haven't had a chance to have that discussion yet about what service model you want, so, and you know, so this is kind of placeholder, and pending council's direction, modifications can be made.
Yeah, I had a question about this. So the $150,000 that is set aside in reserve for an in-house city attorney, that means that if we were to decide to move back to an in-house city attorney after our interim services are complete, that it would cost an additional $150,000 over what we're currently paying for the current services. Is that right?
Not definitively, but we identified that as kind of a possible amount with some buffer in there. Of course, there would be more refined information about those costs in the analysis that council has requested. And, you know, a lot of it would depend on where you set that salary. And
okay,
if you do bring it back in-house, what the starting salary of that individual would be, et cetera. So this is an amount that we think is a sufficient amount to hold to the side in reserve that would enable council to make that change if you want to.
Okay, thank you.
And just to add on to that, this amount is also set aside if you guys choose not to go with an in-house, but this can also be appropriated to continually to fund the contract city attorney. The community relations program, the budget reflects an addition of the community state of the city event. There has been an additional fund set aside for Spanish translation and engagement, an additional $4,000 for videotaping, an additional $15,000 for development of butterfly grove materials, and $35,000 set aside for a community survey.
Where's the Beautified Goleta? Is that here or is there somewhere else?
Beautified Goleta is paid out of the solid waste fund.
Okay.
So this is all still general fund that we're talking about.
Luke, what is the community survey you're referring to?
That community survey, I'll let Michelle elaborate on that one.
So we had identified several years ago, the year is escaping me right now, a need to know where the community, the community's perception about the city's level of service delivery and what their priorities are. So we had that survey initially done. It was very informative. It asked a lot of questions about many services, and so we got a very clear picture of what the community values and what they want to see the city provide. It's been quite a few years, though, so our thought was it might be a good idea to do this, again, set money aside. And if it were a situation, if the council is looking to entertain any revenue enhancements through ballot measures or something like that, the money for a survey could, community survey would be set aside so a survey could precede that effort and help inform council on those types of issues too.
Thank you.
I was just going to mention, I believe we've done at least two community surveys, as I recall, since I've been on council. And that information, for those that haven't been here, might be helpful so they can see what the outline is. And it's really, in essence, a report card on the community. You know, are we taking care of the things that they're interested in, like keeping the roads up to speed and the signals and street trees and our parks and what have you? And it goes through in some detail. But I think it's very informative, and I think it would be worthwhile to provide that information to those that haven't seen it before.
Certainly.
I just have a quick question. I have nothing against the community survey. I think that's a great idea, and it's probably time we do one. Have we ever thought about contacting the university and seeing if they could help us with some kind of a survey? Maybe it would be less expensive. I'm not sure they have the capability, but I know they do a lot of surveys.
We can explore that, sure.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
I worked for a short time in their service center, but I think they might have closed it. I don't know. I know people who still do surveying there, but they had a specific center, and I heard that it got closed.
Okay, moving on to the support services program. Overall, 1% increase, largely due to increase in insurance premiums. We have increase in city hall rent and increase in computer-related software and maintenance. The library budget. Now, this particular library budget will be discussed at a later workshop on May 25th. There is an upcoming ad hoc meeting on May 17th to discuss funding. And as of right now, staff is anticipating approximately $200,000 needed in fiscal year 2018-19 from the general fund.
And again, that is a placeholder number. There's a lot of information we're still waiting for, but we wanted to provide a ballpark number so that we could see in general what the effects of that would be in year two.
The finance department, so we're expecting an overall increase of 2.3%. This includes that 20% transfer of the management assistant position. The service supplies and services have been adjusted to reflect the actual costs, so we've experienced a 33% decrease. This is mostly due to the comprehensive user fee study. It's currently being an RFP is currently being worked on and is planning for release by the end of June. And I wanted to note that we are in our last year of our current audit contract. City policy specifies 3 years, an optional 2 years for a total of 5 years, so we're entering in our fifth year. So this will be our last year of White, Nelson, Deal, and Evans. And we also have our five-year banking agreement ending in the second fiscal year here on fiscal year 2018-19. Current planning. So current planning, the budget includes extending the two-year term associate planner and also the removal of the vacant management analyst position. You'll notice there's an overall decrease, though that's due to the zoning ordinance and historic preservation having been encumbered in this current fiscal year, and those are currently underway. Building and safety, no significant changes. This is completely dependent on building activities, so staff tends to reevaluate this at mid-year, and we'll make recommended changes or adjustments if necessary. Advanced planning, there's primarily a 19.6% decrease, and this is due to oil, gas, electrical facility staff support currently being encumbered in fiscal year 16-17, as well as a zoning ordinance. There's a proposed request for an aerial imagery of the city. It's to be done, estimated cost around $15,000, and this is a cost that's going to be occurring or being requested, being done, the service being done every 2 years. The local coastal program is also budgeted at $100,000, and a proposed amount for computer technology in the amounts of $84,000 and $85,000, which relates to a current contract we have for an electronic permit tracking system. There's also funds set aside in the second fiscal year for a creek and watershed management plan, general plan, and local coastal program. Any information, Ann Wells will be able to provide that.
I have a question in regards to the local coastal program. If I remember correctly, we received a grant from the Coastal Commission to create our plan, since we haven't had one since we have incorporated. So have we expended all those funds?
It's off now.
Is it working?
Yes.
There we go.
It's working.
We received a grant a few years ago, and the requirements of the grant were implemented. And so it got us about halfway to where we need to go, which was what was allowed under the grant. When we're finished with our zoning, then we will circle back and complete the rest of the requirements, but the bulk of the back and forth with getting feedback from the Coastal Commission staff is completed, and we did our policies, draft policies to address sea level rise and a few other requirements that are new under the Coastal Act. So it's basically, we did finish the grant, to answer your question specifically, which didn't require that we take the local coastal program to you for adoption and certification, because additional work was necessary to get there.
Okay. But this $100,000 will get us there.
We hope so. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, moving on to the Planning Commission and Design Review Board. There's no significant changes. There's costs that's reflected in moving. The clerk attending meetings is now included in the city clerk's budget and not in the Planning Commission Design Review Board budget. Sustainability program, there is an addition of an intern position and also being requested an annual subscription to the STAR Communities program in the amount of $4,750 in the first year. Now moving on to Public Works.
Just a quick question. The intern position, that's a paid internship then?
That is a paid internship.
And it's, okay. Do we have any work study?
We have the ability to provide that when we reach out to the university for interns. Sometimes we have interest where they are asking for a work study program, and we are able to accommodate that. So it just depends on the individual. Some of them don't have access to that program, some do. So it's something we can be flexible with and accommodate when needed.
So in other words, we advertise the position, and then if somebody has work study money, then we try and take advantage of that, or do we advertise a position as work study?
We don't advertise it as work study because typically we don't need to do a lot of advertising for our interns. You know, we do get interest voluntarily, but they typically in with the work study program, we do still end up having a share that we contribute, so it isn't 100% unpaid to us.
Right, 90. They pay. We yeah, pay 10%.
Yeah, right, exactly. So we do have unpaid internships if somebody is looking for just work experience. We have the work study option, as I mentioned, and then we have paid internships as well.
Okay, because the difference is with the unpaid internships, the underlying it is their expectation that they're going to learn and benefit and so forth. Work study, they're getting paid a salary, and there isn't the same burden on staff to come up with interesting, innovative, or any other sorts of activities. You can just give them work to do.
We generally do that in all cases, the way it actually turns out, because we do have many things that interns can be very helpful with.
Okay, moving on to Public Works. Public Works Administration, the budget reflects reclass of a management analyst to a senior management analyst. This is also reflected in the CIP, and administrative assistant to management assistant. We've also redistributed a percentage of staff cost allocation to the Solid Waste Fund, Fund 211.
And that's to reflect the current amount of workload that actually does pertain to the Solid Waste Division. So just trying to do a little more cost recovery there.
Engineering services, there's an additional $70,000 for engineering support. We have an on-call traffic engineer being requested only for $40,000 in the first fiscal year. The facilities maintenance budget, there's a reduction in the building maintenance line item, primarily due to that we fund various facility improvements, and they've been moved into the CIP budget. Security camera systems being requested for $5,000. There's the HVAC maintenance for $4,000, and then we've also budgeted general repair services of $50,000 for the city facilities.
I have a question, a couple of questions, actually. What happened to the council direction to get a full-time traffic engineer?
We have that position allocated. We've been in multiple recruitment attempts and have not been able to fill that position. We're using contract traffic engineer services to address some of the workload. That's something we're forced to do because we haven't been able to find the right candidate. But it is an ongoing effort.
Okay, I guess that's my question. I wanted to know if it was something we were continuing to do.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a very difficult position to fill, and we're not the only agency that's having trouble with that. We've heard other cities, the county, even Caltrans. It's just tough to get people, not just to our area, but throughout California that have those credentials and that experience.
My next question has to do with, I noticed the listing for security camera system and HVAC maintenance and general repair services, 50 grand for city facilities, et cetera. And it maybe it's covered somewhere else in the public works expenditures. But going back a ways, the council requested that we change out when we had a problem with controllers, because the controllers in our signals were so old, we directed public works to replace those. What's the status on the replacement of the traffic controllers for our signalized intersections?
I'll have our public works director comment on that.
Well, we had hoped that the traffic engineer that we had on staff briefly was going to help with that effort. Then we lost the traffic engineer. And we are just now getting ready to issue a request for proposal for the design for the redesign of intersections where we're going to go ahead and replace those controllers. It's been a matter of workload versus available staff.
Is there funding available to go forward with that?
Yes, we're going to. We have that in the CIP budget that we will be bringing to during the CIP.
Okay. And does that include, besides the controllers, and maybe it's tied together so that I understand better, but we've changed out a number of our intersections where we actually have a countdown for seconds for people getting across, which for all those that, especially impaired, to get across an intersection has been incredibly helpful. So is that a part of the controller program, or is that totally separate?
No, that would be a part of it. See, one of the things, if we go in there and we touch anything, we're going to have to redo. We're going to have to reevaluate the entire intersection. That would include the countdown ped heads, make sure everything is ADA compliant. For example, at Fairview and Encina, the addition of another 1A pole on the southeast corner. So we have to do everything. Were it as simple as going in and slapping in another controller, we could have just gone through and replaced those controllers with our technician, but we can't. We need to look at everything, and if we're touching it, we upgrade the whole intersection to what it needs to be today.
Okay, and does that also include the additional acquisition of the cameras that are above the intersections? Because I know the one at Marvia created some issues for those of us that travel along Cal Real. And so I noticed it was just all replaced the other day, and we've got a new LED up on top, and so I'm pleased to see that. But that took quite a length of time to do so. So do we have any backups for those?
I believe the issue there was that it's a pretty hefty pole, and having all of that replaced took a while to get the parts. I don't know about backup cameras. I'll find out so that we know what the lead time is.
Well, it would seem, and that was one of the things that was pushing the controllers, because we had intersection, at least one, if not more, that were on flash because we didn't have a replacement controller, even though I know you diligently tried to find one outside of our county and the cities around here to get a replacement. But that's also an important ingredient, that we have the next necessary redundancies so we don't end up having those kinds of problems.
In terms of the controllers, we have at least one controller in the shop ready to go. The problem was it's a 40-year-old controller that went, which means changing out a lot of other things. And that's the other intersection that would be next. That's Hollister at Pine and Rutherford. And when we finally did, we changed out the other controller on an emergency, and the cable is fused to the conduit that goes under the road. So, I mean, even that conduit needs to be changed out. So, the controllers, we do keep extra controller. It's the cameras, I'm not sure the state of our inventory on that.
Okay. If you could find out, I'd appreciate that.
I will do that.
Question. I have a question. Actually.
Yes.
The Maravilla, that was a pole that went down in the traffic accident?
That's correct.
Okay. The traffic engineer position, are you assuming that in 18-19 we'll by then fill the position and not have to contract out?
I'm lighting candles that we do it in 17-18, but, you know, Oxnard is on just continuous recruitment at this point. I have recruiters calling me and asking me for lead on traffic engineers, and I say, I wouldn't tell you, you know, but it's very difficult.
So then my question then, Ms. Gagliolini, is why don't we budget for $40,000 for 18-19?
If the city manager... I mean, that's something we don't want. I think we're trying to say that we're still hopeful we're going to fill this position.
We may not need it, but we're in the process of approving a 2-year budget.
Right. We could put it in year two, just as a contingency.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then council can, after we put that in and you see the impact, you can decide if that's going to work for you when you make the final decisions.
Okay.
Thank you. I had a question. I don't know who precisely, but I just wanted to, well, one observation, one question. The observation is, look, we're twins.
Huh? No, we're not. No, we're not.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
No, we're not.
The question is, is it in the CIP, the community center?
Oh, that's in the CIP, which we'll present to you at a future workshop.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to parks and open space. Overall, 28% decrease is primarily due to the reduction of the one vacant lead maintenance worker. We We also have the reclass of a lead maintenance worker to the maintenance supervisor position. We have park maintenance at $220,000 in both years, and then tree maintenance at $100,000 and $90,000. Now, any park facility improvements have now been programmed in the CIP budget, pending review at a future workshop. The capital improvement program, we have the deletion of the vacant five-year term senior project engineer. We have an on-call modeling engineer support request of $50,000, engineering support services for $30,000, and another $30,000 for engineering support related to grant applications. For street lighting, there are no significant changes. And this brings us to our next slide. One of the major topics we wanted to cover here was the street improvements, and this has the pavement rehabilitation costs, which are not currently budgeted, though we did prepare scenarios in the next few slides with possible funding options that can meet the pavement condition index levels.
So I'd just like to mention we have about 15 minutes left of our scheduled time. What we were thinking is that we probably wouldn't get a whole lot farther than the pavement rehabilitation program anyway, so we can press on and try to get through that. That might be a natural stopping point, or if council wants to stop now or go a little longer, I leave it up to you.
I just want to say real quickly that we do have a speaker, and she's been patiently waiting through all this to speak, so I'd like to bring her up and have her speak, and then we can decide what we're going to do.
Certainly.
Thank you so much, Mayor Perotti and members of the council. I'm Kristen Miller, President and CEO of the Goleta Chamber of Commerce, representing 450 members and 35,000 jobs in the Goleta community. Today, I'm also representing the Old Town Business Committee, a group we have formed to address issues in Old Town. I have submitted a letter that asks you to keep in mind some of our priority recommendations as you deliberate the budget these next couple of months. We're not in a position here to be endorsing specific projects or asking you for specific funding amounts. The letter is a step forward in giving you consensus-based feedback from our well-balanced group of businesses, individuals, and stakeholders. I will just highlight the points here, but you can read it later, that we support the Complete Streets project and really plan to participate in that ongoing effort. We ask you to prioritize cleanliness, power washing, street sweeping, and trash cans. We're very concerned about landscaping, maintaining existing trees, and planting new ones. We are interested in gateway signage, something bold that announces an entrance to Old Town. We support public transportation and your continuing relationship with MTD, routes, and improved bus stops. Parking, parking, parking. We love the new first public parking lot at Community West Bank and support efforts to secure more in that fashion. Our group is happy to see that funding for the Chamber's Visitor Services and Old Town Committee are recommended for renewed funding, and we support the $25,000 that is funded through the Chamber for this work in Old Town. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Richards, you had your hand up.
Yes,
before.
Actually, this is a perfect segue, because one of the things that I wanted to make sure we started a discussion about today was the idea of the funding of agency support and requests. And it strikes me that, you know, this is one of the four areas, along with the capital improvement program, the pavement program, and the library, that has been kind of kept out of the budget discussion, and that seems like the main area of contention that we will have to figure out going forward. So that'll be one of the major decisions of the council as we move forward. And it also strikes me that I did the math, and it looks like we allocated about $510,000 for this year, and based on what I see so far, we have about $657,000 in requests for next year. So as I was starting to think about this, it's like, okay, this is obviously a lot of need, and I read through the requests, and I, as far as I could tell, they're all very worthwhile and good projects and things that are looked like they would be good for the community. But what I couldn't find was, I was trying to figure out, okay, you know, coming from it in a, you know, I guess my policy analyst hat, what's the criteria that we use to evaluate these requests? Like, how do we decide one request over another? What's the basis of our evaluation? Are these just programs that we like? Are they the ones that we personally feel connected to? Are they the ones that we have been involved with ourselves, perhaps? Or, you know, what is the basis of that? And, you know, I remember thinking from a perspective of not being on the council, like, you know, previous years, not really knowing, like, oh, well, what is it that the council, you know, how do they decide who to give this money to? This is a lot of money. $500,000 is not insignificant. And I'd like to know that we had some kind of criteria that we can agree on, that we are basing our decisions as we move forward. So, I mean, before we even begin the discussion, I think if we could just try to think about what are the things that, you know, what would the criteria be? What would be the basis of our evaluation? I think one of the other questions that I had as I was looking at this is, where did the grants that we had looked at for the city grant program fall into this? So there were some grants that we looked at for CDBG and city grants that we didn't fund. Are they also part of these requests? Should they be part of these requests? Are they different than the requests that we're looking at in front of us? What happened to them, I guess, is one of my questions. I think it's a worthwhile discussion for us to just pause and think about it. And I want to actually offer, because as I was thinking about this question myself, there were a few things that I thought we might want to, you know, just to throw out there as things that would be important. For me, I thought that anything that we fund should be addressing an identified unmet need of the residents of Goleta. Okay, that seems pretty basic, but I think that, you know, that it should be an unmet need. It should be something that we agree is a need in the community. And it should be of benefit to the entire community. Or it should be of particular benefit to the low-income, underserved, and vulnerable residents in our community. So those were a few things. And then one more thing I thought would be that it would be something either that the city is not doing, cannot do, or cannot do as cost-effectively as someone else could do. So I guess I just want to bring these up. I want to propose these because I think that as a starting point that it would be good. I would like it if we could agree on something that we could actually have in writing, because as I was starting to look and, you know, at you know, this process, I couldn't find anything in writing. If there is something in writing that we do use as guidance or as guidelines or as criteria, it would be great to draw that to our attention, because I'm not aware of it. And so, anyway.
Did you want to go? All right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was pondering whether I was going to bring it up or not, but since you opened the door, I think I will. And that is, the current county city policy is that we went through those kinds of discussions prior to your arrival. And all the ones that are currently funded, we received, and some were many, many years ago, very specific, very detailed requests as to the needs and how it serves the community. So from my perspective, those things were done. And the council way back then made the decision that once there was agreement in funding those particular requests, that they would go into the line item of the budget. So they'd be part of the budget, not a case of them disappearing from the budget or some other means. Because, first off, a lot of these things are, if they were to be cut out tomorrow, it would have a tremendous impact, and I'm not sure, and in some instances, it would may so severely impact their programs that they would be incredibly diminished and maybe non-functional. I don't know. But I'll let them speak to that. So I don't have a problem with what you're saying as far as, you know, bringing yourself up to speed. I think that's great. But I do have a real problem that this budget was promulgated without including those line items, which had been promised to these organizations in the past because they became line items for that purpose. And it doesn't mean that we, if we were to have to cut back, doesn't mean that they're sacred, we don't cut back. Yeah, we've done that before as well. But I guess I'm a little taken back that people who felt comfortable in their funding and were not being pushed to be told, oh, by the way, and I don't know that they've been told anything yet, sounds like they haven't, that all of a sudden, you know, come July 1st, you're not going to have any funding, or your funding's going to be incredibly impaired. And that's not the message that we as a council gave. We gave the message that these are line items, they will be in the budget, and that our expectation, that's the way it's going to work on into the future. Doesn't mean you can't ask for more. Doesn't mean that somebody else can't ask for some if they've never been funded before. And it is very distinctly different than the city grants program or the CDGB program. That's an entirely separate program, that, again, decided many years ago. If this council wants to go and redo everything, certainly this council has the right to do so. But in my opinion, the information that's not provided to us, and we keep going back to this, you know, this budget figure includes it, this budget figure does not. Well, in my opinion, the council already spoke. We have a policy, and that policy is it will be accounted for. Now, if we want to change the policy, that's perfectly fine. Bring it to council. We can have the discussion, and if it gets changed, it gets changed. But that doesn't give anybody the right to submit a budget that doesn't include the things that our policy dictates should be included in the budget and the promises we had made to the community and to those entities that represent the community. So, again, I'm a little taken back by the fact that it wasn't included. As I say, I decided I wasn't going to say anything, but as you opened up the door, I figured it's appropriate I should, because I have a real concern about it, and I'm very concerned about when you look at a cross-section of those organizations, any impacts of reductions could be incredibly severe.
So I think, in a sense, well, first, I don't think any organization is entitled to, each time we do a new budget, we look at it and reconsider the choices that we've made in the past, and there's not some sort of inherent right to funding by some organization because a previous council made a choice. Having said that, I think in the case, let's say, if funds are used, if they've had an expectation and went out and they have a lease in which they've depended upon funds from the city, or they there's something where there's some commitment in that part where they were depending on it in a way, I think that does put it in slightly different category than if it's you know, unprogrammed already, and there isn't some sort of financial impact associated with our changing our policy. I too, am glad Councilmember Richards proposed that idea, because I do think we have a lot. I don't think our decision-making should be based on seniority, that the people who came in or the organizations that came in are entitled to funds, and that others are not entitled if we're not, unless we're going to increase money, that we have a permanent design where certain groups are getting money regardless of what we perceive today as the priority. I think we need to continually reassess what are the priorities, what are the things that we think are most important. And I would add, and we can send this in, and everyone else can come up with their list if they think it appropriate. But, you know, what are the funds for organizational support? And if so, is it for a lease or some salaries or some sort of thing that's been counted on and programmed in? Is it for some sort of ongoing core city service, sort of like Gersh Park or something like that, where it's essentially city service? If there's something, money going where the failure to fund it would put people's lives at risk or property at risk. I don't know if we have anything in our list right now that is, you know, sort of, I don't know, some sort of, if we had funding in there that did provide something that made people safer.
Crossing guards.
Okay, good. Are the funds some sort of bridge or something that will enable the organization to get over some hump and become independent? Are we able to enable them to get to a point where they don't need our money, they aren't dependent on our money? Those are essentially some of the things I would think are appropriate for us to consider when we're evaluating the range of different proposals that have come in. And I would share these and any others that people think of. Thank you.
Well, I wasn't going to say a thing, but I'll throw in my two cents. I would like to see the line item have been previously approved by councils, and I'm talking many councils because we have long relationships, that the line items be maintained in our budget, that the new asks, you can look at them in the criteria that you want. But I know for a fact there are some organizations that totally depend on that line item, and I'll use Fairview Gardens as an example. Last budget cycle, we gave them $50,000. But it was $50,000 times two because of a two-year budget cycle, and it made a significant impact to the operation of their facility. And now if we go back and say, hey, re-justify it. See, the whole advantage of having a line item is that you have to justify it to the council, but you don't have to keep re-justifying it every year once the council's opined on it, and we've become a partner. Like Gersh Park, we were partners since cityhood. Do we want to have them come back and say, hey, tell us why you need the $100,000? We know why they need the $100,000, so why spend time doing that? So I would hope that we move forward and so we have an understanding of what the budget looks like. We made a commitment on line items. Keep them in there so we can see how our budget is playing out and how we can afford to do the extras or add. And I think that $500,000, if I'm not mistaken, includes that $100,000.
It does.
For the city grant program?
Yes.
For the city grant program, it's in your budget in a different line item.
Yeah.
It's in 101-511-220, so that is in there.
But that's different than the $500,000.
Yes, it's different from here it is, the 223, which is the support to other agencies.
Okay. I'd just like to say really quickly, because we're running out of time, and I just want to get my two cents in. I like the idea of having something in writing that kind of helps us, you know, making the when, even though they've some of these items have been in for since the beginning of time, but why are we selecting them? I think that's important, and maybe if we come up with some ideas. I just want to also say that, I think I said this last year, that we're going to have some really tough decisions to make this year based on some unknown conditions. Department of Finance, the library. We have some big ticket items coming that we're going to have to fund. And are we going to do that and continue to give to everyone? And as more people come in requesting, how is that all going to play out? So I could go on a lot longer about this. It's not that I don't think that there's truly, truly a need. I mean, we just finished our city grant committee meetings, and it's very difficult. Very difficult when you know that there's such a need in the community and there's just limited funding.
I would suggest or ask that the staff come up with review the criteria that we can send and come up with their own and try and give us some options for reviewing the proposals and the support to other agencies.
Yeah, good. I agree.
Thank you.
Well, I know we're out of time, we're over already, but I just wanted, since I brought this up, I wanted to at least share that I appreciate that, you know, that there's been a tradition of giving this money to these groups and that they've become, you know, reliant on it, and I'm not doubting that the money that we've given is put to good use and that it's good for the community. My concern is that, you know, we're on a two-year budget cycle. And every, you know, our entire organization, all of the department heads are asked to justify and account for the money that they're spending and put in a request for the next 2 years. And I don't see that it would be too much to ask for any of the money that we give out to ask that same, accountability, that same justification for why we're giving money out. And, I mean, just because we've given it out in the past, I don't necessarily think that it requires us to continue that. And I think that if we were to just continue to just give out the same to the same groups, the same money that we've given out every year, that there may be some real needs that we've received that are new from requests that wouldn't be considered because the money wouldn't be there. And I wouldn't want to, I would want to make sure that we're really giving it to the groups with the greatest need and that will have the greatest impact on our community.
So, Madam Mayor, council members, for staff, it seems that it's clear there's an interest from council to have us propose some draft criteria for evaluating the requests. We can do that. But what I don't have clear direction on, because the conversation has gone back and forth, is whether in the next packet that we produce for workshop number two, do you want to see the funding of the line item requests and the new requests added in so you can see the impacts to the bottom line. I wasn't sure. I heard some different things, so I really need some clarification so we know what to prepare for you. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I would like to see the line items because that's what the current policy is. It hasn't been changed. We haven't voted to change the policy. That is the policy. Some may not like it, but that is the policy. So I would hope that's how we would go forward. And I didn't mean to imply, although I'm hearing it from both sides, that we don't scrutinize the requests that have been made. If there's a need to cut back in the budget, trust me, we've been there, we've done that. So that's not to suggest for a moment that they're sacred cows or that if we're cutting back elsewhere that we wouldn't necessarily cut there. That wouldn't be the true case. So please keep that in mind. And I didn't mean to imply if that's what you interpreted. I was wrong to do that. They're there, as I said, like any line item in the budget, they're subject to review and they're subject to any reductions that may be necessary. But they're a line item, and they're treated the same way as what we've treated our departments in the past. And that's the first thing I'm talking about. Any new request, that's a whole different ball of wax. That's a whole different issue. And, of course, they have to justify why they had the need, what they propose to accomplish by receiving city funds, who's it going to affect, what are their estimated numbers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's, you know, that's appropriate and that's proper, and I would expect nothing less than that. So I just want to make my clarification very clear on this, that that is the case. And I was a bit taken back when I saw the line items removed because that's not the policy that's currently in effect.
I concur.
I guess and as far as any other options, as long as when we get to that last segment where we talk about the cumulative decision-making, things are transparent, just our choices are visible so we can understand what's going on. I mean, I give you the option of how best to present it so that we can make clear decisions.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is put the line items in according to previous council policy, and the new request to not put in at this time.
Well, I mean, as long as we have columns that indicate where the new money is, I don't want to make a presumption that we're going to adhere to the status quo of the support to other agencies. I mean, that is something to be decided, so I don't want it obscured or otherwise not visible for our decision-making.
Right, and your worksheets do reflect the new requests already, so we just wouldn't plug them into the schedule where they would affect the bottom line until you've made that decision.
The new requests wouldn't be plugged in until the very end, the very end of the process. We already have time set aside for that. But the line items give us an idea of where we're at as we move forward. So is there concurrence to put the line items in for future?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, and what you're describing, I actually see it's on page 63 in our packet where it has the proposed 2017, 18, 18, 19, which includes the funding for the agencies which have already been given funding. So, right. I mean, I guess what I'm hearing you say, I believe, is already in there.
Yeah, it's just talking about the totals. When we see the totals at the bottom, whether that line item is that spending of $500,000 is going to be incorporated, mm-hmm. and that's fine.
And one thing to remember is as we move to the process, especially the last day, there are going to be more people asking for money.
Well, exactly, and that's why we need to have criteria. So, yeah.
Okay. Does staff have direction?
Yes.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Michelle. Well, the meeting's adjourned.